I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. Welcome to Talk to the Audience, where this is always death. I'm your host, Disney correspondent Bob Mackey, who is here with me today.
Pre-subscriber to Disney Plus, Henry Gilbert.
And in case you are not aware of this podcast or new to the Patreon, hello and welcome.
Welcome. Thanks for signing up for the Patreon, all you new folks.
Thank you very much. This is our community podcast. It happens every month towards the end of the month, and we go over news in the Simpsons world and in our world. And we also read your questions and comments from our newest episodes we've done this month.
Yes, yeah, it's always a fun end of the month check-in. And also we go through the Simpsons news and tell folks what's going on in our neck of the woods and what cool things you can look forward to in the coming month of Patreon fun.
It's true. And just with the last, I don't know, five episodes, there's new Disney news every time. Yeah. But this is the biggest, most concrete Disney news we've had so far.
100%.
I think last time it was Bart appearing on the Disney Corporation homepage in a little square.
Yes.
And now, apparently, the plans for the Disney Plus streaming service have been announced in terms of what it means for The Simpsons.
And for all media, but Simpsons were a key part of it. Yes, so on April 11th, Disney had their long-promised full unveiling of Disney Plus. Now, we'd all knew they were working on a Disney Netflix, a Netflix killer from Disney that would incorporate the astronomical amount of content they have, which really is a lot. And so they finally unveiled it. And listeners of previous community episodes may recall that I quoted multiple news stories that said, well, it won't be on Disney Plus immediately because there's Simpsons World and that has it exclusively and that lasts for two more years. That was the reporting I read. Clearly they were wrong, or Disney paid a crazy amount of money to undo Simpsons World, because Disney Plus on November 12th will launch with many things, including all 30 seasons of The Simpsons on it.
I don't know about you, Henry, but as a content hog, I will belly up to that trough and gorge myself on everything that they're going to offer.
8,000,000%.
Yeah, it better have. I mean, I have a feeling that it won't have commentaries, but I really want them to be the option to choose a 4x3 on those episodes.
I would hope they at least learn from Simpsons World that the fans who are paying for this want 4x3. Like, I hope they learn from that. But yeah, it was a really shocking thing. They didn't live stream it, but they live tweeted what was happening at the event, and news reporters were there for it too. And so it was the unveiling of Disney Plus. They talk about how they're going to have all brand new Disney movies will appear on that service like months after they're out of theaters. Mm-hmm. Every Marvel movie, they're getting original Marvel series. A live action Lady and the Tramp is going to exclusively be on there.
Oh, good.
At least two Star Wars series were announced for all Star Wars movies. And about a dozen immediately from the Disney Vault are going to be in there. Not all at once, as Bob had
hoped. I'm steamed about that, but they said no Song of the South.
Nope. And also that they're cutting from Dumbo, the See an Elephant Fly song.
Which, okay, so Dumbo's now like 44 minutes long.
It's too short to cut that scene. Yeah. And as racist as racist and minstrel-y as that scene is, plot-wise, it gives him his inspiration to fly. And so if you get rid of that, it's weird that he just starts flying in the next scene after getting drunk. But no, I mean, I just rewatched that scene recently, like, very well animated, totally a minstrel show, and mocking black people. That's what it is. But that's beside the point. The Simpsons are there.
Yeah. But Michael Jackson's episode will not be there.
That is, you know, you guys will hear me come up with this theory in a future episode that we've already recorded. But I do think that now that we know that it's on the service from day one, that Disney probably said, we are not having that Michael Jackson episode on Disney Plus. And so to get out in front of it, Al Jean, Matt Groening, and James L. Brooks, who I'm sure agree with it, they're not being forced to do it, but they get to go out in front of it and say, you know what, we agree with this too, but it's actually our idea. So don't blame us. Do blame us. Don't blame Disney. We'll take the heat.
They're being forced to do it, but they wanted to take the, I wouldn't say blame, take the responsibility, take the acclaim.
Well, it also lets them, as people are worried about Simpsons being taken over by Disney, it lets the old guard say, no, it was our idea, not Disney's, which I could be wrong. This is just me spreading rumors and lies, perhaps. But I get the feeling, knowing how Disney works, that they didn't want to have it. And the Groening and company had to agree with that.
So no Moonwalker on the service. Or Captain EO. Captain EO's a ride? What is Captain EO?
I mean, it's a movie. Oh, you never saw Captain EO?
No.
Yeah, I got to see it probably. I got to see Song of the... It's funny. I got to see Song of the South in its last theatrical showing when I was four in 1986.
Wow.
It bored the shit out of me. But also I was four, so I didn't know how racist it was. But so I did that. And then, as you may recall, after the death of Michael Jackson, Captain EO got to come back to Epcot for a couple years. So that's when I finally got to see Captain EO. And all it is like a 4D movie, like that Kung Fu Panda one we saw at Universal or Hollywood. It's just a 3D movie is in front of you,
they squirt water at you and stuff.
Not even that. They shake your chair a little. Like, it's a crappy experience. And then it's a bad movie. Like, it's a lame, long music video directed by Coppola.
Wow.
But that won't be on there either. I would highly doubt that. So yes, but the key facts are, though, every Simpsons from the first 30 years at least, and I would expect the new ones from 31 and 32 will show up on there. I don't know if this means Simpsons World will keep existing concurrently because they are separate services. Disney Plus is, you get Simpsons World through a cable subscription, while Disney Plus is like Netflix. You can just sign up for it no matter what your cable service is. That's how I watch Simpsons World, is a relative of my husband's just has, they have a cable service and I use their password.
Well, yeah, that's one thing. So all this corporate monopoly stuff is bad for the world and humanity, but good for our podcast, because as we start getting into seasons, people might not remember as well. It's going to be even easier to watch these episodes.
Yes, yeah. Which,
I mean, as of now, they are still hard to find. You either need the DVDs or... The Simpsons World, or stealing, of
or
course.
Stealing, yeah. You know, that's pretty easy to just search "Pixa Club name of Simpsons episode" in Google. That's just an observation I have.
But I guess there's like a little teaser reel that they put together, which I guess was David Silverman did not realize it would be shown outside of like the context of meetings.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It is weird. It's a little corporate-y, though. That's part of the joke that it's so heavily corporate-y. But yes, the Simpsons welcome their new actually, that's just exactly what Homer says, so I'm going
to
play it.
Homer Simpson here, proud addition to the Disney family and soon appearing on Disney Plus. I, for one, salute our new corporate overlords. Mm-hmm. Now, family, put on the mouse ears. You only get one chance to make a first impression.
I don't wanna, I'm not gonna, you can't make me.
Put on the ears, boy. March.
What the Dumbo?
This is a great honor.
Take it, Maggie.
Maggie shows up Tinkerbell style.
It's all very cute, but please don't reuse an old joke.
I kind of like it as them. I like it because it feels so self-referential, but you know, it was written by the old guard. So they're just referencing themselves. But I mean, I don't think Dave Merkin worked on that. That was from a Merkin episode. So it's more like they're referencing an episode they didn't work on, but, that's the closest thing to a good joke in there. I mean, I do like how cruel their drawing of Rupert Murdoch is in that trash can. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, Bob Iger is drawn as a Superman. Like, he's, I don't think Bob Iger has ever looked more handsome than in that drawing. And they got Darth Vader and Dumbo in there, and they all put on their Mickey ears to let you know that they're good corporate tools. So it was, I mean, this is just how it is, guys. They're a Disney, and that's an important historical moment right there. That was the first official Disney Simpsons content. Dan sounded so old in
he
there.
He did sound old and tired. I want to say that, like, again, the good part of this is that this makes The Simpsons more accessible, and it is fairly inaccessible, like I said before. I think this might make a new generation of fans who just will see it on a streaming network and start watching it, because you can't just do that right now.
Yeah, a friend of the show, Bill Oakley, I saw him make this point out there of saying that, like, they had dropped the ball with this generation right now, that they... you know, kids watch things on YouTube or Netflix, and to put Simpsons behind that Simpsons World paywall with all its like shitty ass ads, kids aren't going to watch this. But now all those kids who are just getting it for their Star Wars and their Marvels, they have the best TV show of all time right there to watch.
Fox was being a bit too precious with it, I think.
Disney knows they need to, if they want to enslave us all as fans of their things, they need more accessibility. So that is the plan. And we didn't mention the price, $6.99.
That ain't bad.
That's half the price of Netflix right now. Like that's
They're trying to shut them down.
Oh, they are, totally. And you can bet if they do shut down Netflix, they'll double that price or triple it because the competition will be over. But, what I don't like about this is just what it portends, that, like, Disney is first to it, but Sony, Paramount, Warner, they're all just going to do this. And so then Netflix just becomes the Netflix content channel, which is fine, too. But I went there for things I'd heard of, and now it's just their things. Like, it makes me, at least they're investing in anime. And if they keep doing things like Evangelion, then I'm sticking around with Netflix. But, and as Netflix loses more and more stuff, Hulu loses more and more stuff, and it just becomes things like Disney Plus. Though I also don't think any company like Warner is not going to spend what Disney is spending on this, because they are spending a lot for new content.
That's true.
Yeah, but $6.99, I mean, look, corporate overlords, capitalism sucks, blah, 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 it does. I'll still pay it, and I'll buy it, because I'm a pig. I'm a pig, and I want my food.
We're content hogs. And it'll be good for animation, more accessible animation.
Yes, I do think that too. And who knows? I think I said it on the Gargoyles one, but like all the Disney Afternoon properties, what if they get more popular on that service and the replays, and that makes people want to make more things like DuckTales?
I wonder if they'll remember Bonkers.
I mean, that's way down their list of bringing back stuff.
HD re-releases. So perfect. So more news. Nancy Cartwright, the voice of Bart, of course, wrote an episode recently.
Yeah, that aired on the 29th. It's shocking it took her that long to get their name on one. I mean, it's just, once a show goes on that long, If Dan Castellaneta broke the glass ceiling on that, you write a script and deliver it to the producer, and they kind of have to do it at that point.
So her episode Girls in the Band aired on March 31st, and apparently she was a co-writer on a 2017 independent movie called In Search of Fellini. So she was not a new writer.
Okay, and she wrote her own book too.
I did read that book back in the day.
Yeah,
that's from 2000. God.
No Scientology talk.
No, that's all left out of the book.
No, I mean, hey, that's nice for her, and that also the Yardley got, I think I forgot to write this one down, but I believe it was Yardley Smith got like a Human Rights Campaign Award for being good for gay people, like, or a GLAAD Award, one of those two. And so, hey, thanks, Yardley. That's very nice of you. And then there was also a new Canada episode. You and your pal should give that a watch.
For some reason, it was like we have they announced the guest. Was that like somebody playing Justin Trudeau? It was like a Canadian impressionist playing Justin Trudeau. I don't know what a Justin Trudeau impression sounds like, so I'll take your word for it.
I feel like they thought they could get Justin Trudeau, and they started animating it, and then they couldn't get
him. I bet you're right, yeah.
I think they
He's not hip enough for The Simpsons, I guess.
I've told this before, but there is a kind of shameful episode where Lisa meets Michelle Obama, and when I saw the scene, I was like, you guys were sure you could get Michelle Obama and you couldn't get her, so you got a celebrity, or you got somebody to impersonate her instead. And
hopefully
it's just
not Tress McNeil.
No, it was an African-American. Okay. I remember that. But it's just like, that's even sadder. It's like, if you can't get her commitment before animation, then just don't animate it, guys. I mean, maybe they thought like, Michelle Obama does Sesame Street, she'll do Simpsons. She did not.
Too risque. So apparently, I didn't look into this at all, but there were some hoaxes about the Notre Dame fire.
Yes. So at or Notre Dame, as we call it.
Notre Dame. That's the football team. There are no Irish in France.
But the very tragic accidental fire at the Notre Dame Cathedral, which happened
Our Lady. Just say
that
Our Lady.
One actually was an accident.
Okay.
Sorry. Notre Dame at that cathedral. It was very sad, but there was one thing spreading after it on that, so much so that Snopes had to publish an article to say it's not true, that surfaced when I searched for Simpsons news just so I didn't miss any. That so somebody, it's actually a terrible hoax. I can't believe anybody believed
it. No.
But it was a fake. Did the Simpsons predict the fire?
Nah, shut up. Not you. whoever wrote that, shut up.
So obviously, the Simpsons have animated everything. So you can imagine that at one time in an episode, after we've watched, there is a shot of the cathedral. But it's just like an establishing shot. They pulled that establishing shot out. Somebody placed very poorly drawn fire on top of it, and then a stock photo of Mr. Burns in front of it. And they're like, oh, hey, I think the Simpsons predicted it. So it's that's what was spreading around right after the fire, a classic. At first, when I read the headline, I was like, wait, the Simpsons predicted this? Was there a joke? Because I don't know. There are a number of episodes of Simpsons I haven't watched. Maybe they made a joke about Homer accidentally burning down the cathedral. They did not, though. It's fake. Are you pulling it up now? I should have pulled it up.
No, I was looking up a tweet about Notre Dame because a friend of the show, Julia Prescott, had a funny tweet about this because so many people, when it was on fire, were posting their pictures of Notre Dame from whatever vacation they took in the past decade.
They're wonderful trips to Paris, which I've never done.
So Julia says, there's a heap of people who feel really, really bad about Notre Dame but can't post photos about it because they all contain their shitty college boyfriends.
That's funny. That's funny. I feel like she's talking about herself.
I think so, too.
That's fun. Yeah, I think that's why you need... You know, if you're going to take vacation photos with somebody you're not serious about, take a few without them.
Get one with just me.
Yeah. Oh, just me. Like, that's cool. And I'll get one of just you. It'll be fun.
Yes, it'll be fair that way. But
yes, don't believe the lies that Simpsons predicted that fire.
Ask us and we'll tell you what's true and what's false. So let's move on to Talking Simpsons comments. The first one is from Bart Carney. And Nico writes, correcting me, dromedary is a camel, Bob. Dromedary camels have one hump and are native to the Sahara, while Bactrian camels have two humps and come from Central Asia. Don't let down the ungulate fan community. And I apologize to all you ungulate lovers. I got it wrong. A camel encompasses many humped things.
Okay, that's so it is a type of dromedary is a type of camel then. Okay, I've learned so much.
They're easier to draw than a two-humped camel, okay?
Camels are gross. I don't like them.
They spit.
And they bite. I'm more afraid of the biting than the spitting. Also on that episode, Kat wrote, are there some polo shirt clues I've been missing this whole time? I've always assumed Homer's shirt was a white button down because of the time in which it was created. In the late 80s, early 90s, my dad, whose job of local drugstore chain manager was slightly less prestigious than Homer's, wore a white short sleeve button down shirt every single day and didn't graduate to polo until around 1995 or so. My dad is definitely a Homer kind of guy, so the clothing similarity seemed obvious to me. Now I realize that there are no actual buttons on Homer's shirt, but if Lisa can have an invisible blue iris, then Homer can have invisible buttons. And note, friend of the show, Nina Matsumoto, did correct this on this and say it is a button-down shirt and that polos are drawn in a different style, and she would know as a master Simpsons artiste.
She's an official Simpsons shirt drawer, so yes. I would trust her opinion on that.
Yeah, no, I think we mentioned that. Oh, yeah. You'll hear that in the Dumbbell Indemnity episode.
Yeah, but I think she mentions Hank Scorpio's shirt, how it's different.
Yes.
But, that's in a future episode. You'll hear that in a week or two. Coming up next, we have The Joy of Sect. And Joe Hodgson writes, so I edited out the first part of Joe's comment because it was a longer one. So the first part set up how people think the season 9 and onwards had a decline. Mm. And here are his follow-up statements about that. I think a lot of the original fans started to drift off around season 9 simply because the show had been on for 9 freaking seasons. We know the show's fan base was primarily adolescents, and for those with the show from the beginning, they're now becoming teens and going through the rebellious phases and probably finding other outlets. It's also repeating itself at this point, which is a problem that won't go away and probably can't if we're looking at current Simpsons. Mostly, though, it would have been really hard to keep the show at season 6 to 7 level, and a decline was expected. The show was still fine, so no one can cancel their pledge. So I agree with you, Joe.
Yes.
It will be fine. And I will say a lot of our listeners are around our age, and I feel like I don't have happy memories of my life surrounding these episodes we're doing now. Like, I feel like high school hell was happening. I was going through puberty. It was just nightmare times for me. But now I can watch these with like stable adult eyes and be in a better space. So you're right. Like, I feel like that was a big part of why we didn't like this era of shows. And also we grew up with it. And it was like, well, that's old now. Here's the new thing. You know, I grew up with that. Now here's the thing
there's
I watch
cooler
now.
Things yeah. that go other places. And you're looking for any flaw then, I think. And yeah, even on episodes that we've done, I think we'll talk about in a second. Even when I didn't like those in my memory, going back to rewatch, he's like, that was a funnier joke than I remember. That was funny. Yeah. That was funny. And I think there'll be more episodes that that do that for that. Maybe, who knows, when we see Homer versus Dignity, maybe I'll have to admit it's really funny when Homer shits himself. Also on that episode, Shy Ranger writes, hearing you guys briefly talk about if movies in the past 10 years could be referenced or parodied and easily understood, that reminded me of something funny. I was shocked a few months ago when I saw that the current series of Danger Mouse did an episode that was a parody of Frozen. It was called Melted. It was about a supervillain who tried to overheat the world, complete with their attempt at a Disney-style musical number. I was very surprised to see an episode like that based around something that recent. And, I mean, Frozen now is like seven years old, I think. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that is it is one movie to reference, but it's also a movie that a ton of people have seen. It is like the Little Mermaid for the little girls of our generation who are now teenagers.
Though, I think also this tweet reminds you, like, oh, there was a Danger Mouse show.
Yeah,
there's a brand new one of those on
Netflix.
Oh,
I'm sure it's better than that dreadful old show. I'm sorry if you have
so
good memories of
memories.
Them, but God, I just want to jump out a window when I see the old show now.
You're not going to like my plan for Danger Month.
Oh, no, please.
But you know what? I stand corrected, though, that everybody, if you do a Frozen reference of Let It Go or whatever, you can count on people to know you're making a reference. I do think that that is an example of a monoculture still existing for sure.
So we have Das Bus next. And sorry about this, everybody, in advance. We had 38 comments on this one. Wow. And to keep this show at an hour or less, we can only read two from each episode. So I enjoyed all of these comments, by the way. We've been getting a lot of comments. This one had a ton. Yeah.
I regret not reading Lord of the Flies before this, but there's only so many hours.
You shouldn't have to read a book before the podcast. But Devin says, the interesting thing about Lord of the Flies is that it was a sort of parody of a very racist book called The Coral Island that was basically telling young British kids, hey, colonialism is fun. These savages are cannibals. Help us enlighten them. Lord of the Flies, meanwhile, is a very harsh criticism of concepts that we would come to know as toxic masculinity and alpha social structures. The ultimate fuck you of the book being that the children become the savages that Coral Island basically demonized. Of course, this means the book was interpreted as being about nihilism and how mankind is ultimately evil. Because obviously, if you think our culture is bad, you must think all humanity is bad.
Yeah, that's a good... I mean, a white culture does it the best, so if we fail at it, it must mean all of it else fails. That's a really interesting idea of it that I never knew, that it's a subtweet of a popular book at the time to say, like, no, the savages are you. Like, we'd all fall to that. You would fall to this if you were on this island. You're all monsters. Like, it's a statement about racist colonialism, which Britain does better than anybody. We're trying, but it's hard to catch up with the British.
Somebody else pointed this out on the comments. I didn't capture this comment, but they said the book was also a parody of a certain genre of children's books at the time, where it was very much about, like, young British kids going on adventures to tropical places and often with, like, very harsh colonial themes. But Lord of the Flies is like, what if that actually happened? It would be a total nightmare, and these kids would kill each other.
Yeah, and they without a parent to watch over them, they would murder another kid because they have no concept of anything. Rio Gio says, and I learned how to say it correctly.
We had some problems last time.
Yes, but they responded to let me know that it is like Neo Geo, Rio Geo. Back in 1976, during the bicentennial days of American flag striped bell bottoms, yes, they were real, and greasy faces, Mazola Margarine initiated an ad campaign that by today's standards would be considered in horribly bad taste, if not out and out racist. It showed a young Native American woman standing in a cornfield describing how corn was referred to as maize in the days prior to the European genocide of the indigenous people. This was all in an effort to sell a horrifically synthetic and trans fat laden product to Americans that had been convinced they were eating healthy. And now, to your horror, please partake in the Mazzola margarine campaign that fueled hack comics for years thereafter. I present to you Maze.
So here's the clip, and this unlocked the Mystery Science Theater reference in my head.
Ooh, boy.
So let's hear it.
You call it corn. We called it maize. We knew all about the goodness of maize, corn, before America was America. You called it Mazzola margarine because the corn oil in Mazzola comes from maize. Mazzola margarine has no cholesterol, naturally. And Mazzola tastes fresh and good, naturally. Call this Mazzola margarine, and remember, it gets goodness from maize.
Ooh, exotic corn, everybody. So in Mystery Science Theater, whenever a character says maize, like I'm trapped in a maze, they would riff, you call it corn.
Oh,
or if someone would say corn, they'd be like, you call it maize. So they're referencing a 1976 commercial.
Wow.
And that unlocked in my brain, like, oh, that's what that was.
That very specific way of saying, you call it maize. That's right. Wow. That's thank you. That's always fun to see something from the 70s that then unlocks what this MST3K reference was. I mean, that definitely... The 70s was all about our apology to the savage Indians is that we will say that you're actually magical peacekeepers and we'll, stereotype you in a friendlier way.
I like how they're trying to dress up the most basic vegetable ever. Like, yes. Can you believe it? It's made of corn. Good old corn. Haven't had that in a while.
No cholesterol in this oily margarine.
Disgusting.
So that then connects it to Bart saying, which the Indians called maize in the episode.
Exactly. Okay. So Nina Matsumoto says, I am resenting calling the end of Lord of the Flies a deus ex machina. A huge fire set on the island by one of the boys in order to flush out and kill another boy is what leads to a naval ship to see the smoke and discover them. They don't just come out of nowhere. Fire is an important theme in the book. It represents both hope and destruction, and the fire meant to destroy ends up saving their lives. Hello, I love this book and have strong opinions. You certainly do, Nina.
Yeah.
And we got it. We understand now.
No,
we're sorry.
Yes, I'm very sorry, Nina. No, you don't catch those themes when you're just reading the Wikipedia synopsis of it. When I'm just reading that, I'm like, then it just shows up to stop the kids from killing each other. But no, fire, I understand too that they are constantly have a fire lit to get attention of a passing ship, and then when it fire goes out, it seems like all hope is lost and all that.
You should have read all the spark notes, Henry.
I'm sorry. And that was, I guess you could call that from Nina, a spark note, because it's from the co-creator of Sparks.
That's right. But I would say Sparks notes.
But also, yes, I bet Nina would have said this to us if she hadn't left halfway through that recording.
That's true. She was sitting in the background for about half of it.
So I'm sorry, Nina. Someday I'll read Lord of the Flies and I'll learn something. I will.
So up next, we have What a Cartoon Comments in the Strangers with Candy, the non-cartoon episode. Yes, you can't. Henry, can you get that first one?
Yes. Elliot says, I did eventually get reintroduced to Strangers with Candy when a teacher used it, this exact episode, in fact, in a writing class I took in college as a kind of writing prompt / thematic inspiration to one of those weekly papers we had to write. I learned to appreciate it and have watched and really loved a few episodes here and there, but I've never had the chance to go back and watch all of it like I did with Upright Citizens Brigade, Mr. Show, and other similar shows that were on at the same time period. I really should get to that at some point. Thanks for the episode and the history and the info on the show. Off to the coal mines to watch all the different shows and movies you guys mentioned. Yes.
Like a cool teacher watching Strangers with Candy in class.
Yeah, and we're now the cool teachers telling them about the show. No, it was really cool to go back to Strangers with Candy. That, boy, it feels like a long time ago we recorded that. But
the beginning of April.
But that was a good and then accidental 20th anniversary episode.
I'm going to embrace that accident. It was great.
And yes, you can't. I wonder what kind of article or essay you wrote about that. Probably about what your future wanted to be, perhaps. Or did you want to be a robot? Was that his thing?
I want to be a robot. Yeah. So Angel says, this was such a nice surprise. I remember how much I loved the show. Then it didn't air anymore and I forgot about it. I seem to be a part of the last generation who remembers after school specials, so it has one of those nostalgic feels to it. The theme song of the first and third season reminds me of the last ABC after school special opening, which visually, from what I remember, looked like the 1990s General Hospital opening and sounded like this song. I think after school specials at that point were trying to be cool for the would-be millennials, since they would be at puberty age around 1996, like me. But it didn't catch on, and it disappeared by the next season with that fanfare. Strangers with Candy was the perfect satire to them. Excuse me while I binge-watch the series. Yes, and it's still funny to me, even though I haven't really seen an after school special in my life.
Mm-hmm.
At least outside of, you know, riff tracks kind of things.
Yeah, I've seen those in clips. Around the same time, I remember Helen Hunt did an interview on some Letterman type show, and they were like, oh yeah, you were in an after school special. And she's like, oh please no. And they're like, yeah, you remember you jumped out the window.
I think they played that on her SNL appearance too, during her monologue. Because she just won her Oscar, and they're like, let's go to the clip of that.
That's right.
So up next we have The Secret of Nim, or what a cartoon movie for last month. A really fun adventure in a Don Bluth movie.
Oh man, them rats know how to live it up.
This is a longer comment by Kaiser Beams. Let's split this up. You can read the first part. I'll read the second part.
Sure. Henry mentioned how the sequel could have focused on the mice who failed to escape Nim, and I could barely hold back my oh boy that escaped my lips. So in the direct-to-video sequel, one of the major plot points is that all of the mice are still alive and still being held captive in Nim. Boy, I wanted to erase that movie from my memory. I didn't know that. Sorry, this is Henry interjecting here. We know this because one of the children of the mice was able to escape Nim to try to get to Thorn Valley, the place where the rats now reside, to mount a rescue. Now, you would think that this rescue would be the focal point of the plot of a movie called Secret of Nim 2, Timmy to the Rescue. But oh no, the plot point gets swallowed whole by the big act to reveal that Martin has not only turned evil, but has taken over Nim and is currently planning an invasion of Thorn Valley so he can rule over rodent kind, I guess?
That's weird. So part two, he says, it's easily the stupidest thing in a movie that contains below average animation, Ralph Macchio attempting to sing, William H. Macy sleepwalking through his role as Justin, a subplot about Jeremy disguising himself as the Great Owl so he can con other woodland creatures out of sparklies, and the fact that even after making the perfect self-sustaining utopia and making such a big deal about it in the first movie, the rats are still shown to be stealing from humans. I wish I knew less about this movie, but alas, I was a kid with low standards. So thank you, Kaiser Beams, for letting us know about this horrible sequel that should never have come into being.
Holy shit. Every new thing I learned about that movie there, I couldn't believe that Martin turned evil and that Jeremy's robbing people of sparklies. Jesus.
There was nowhere to go after the end of the first movie.
Well, the end of the first movie is silly. Like, it's a very silly ending of like, oh yeah, all the rats left. You didn't see him. And I gave him the sparkly as well. That's all. Bye.
So Pinky and the Brain, it's only a paper world.
Yes.
Do you want to take this first one, Henry?
Yes. Yeah. Kevin writes, the music cue from The Fake Earth is the first movement of Dvorak's Symphony No. 9 from The New World. So add that to the list of old-timey references. That was written in 1893. That's really clever.
Yeah. I was going to play a clip of that segment of the song that they stole from, or rather borrowed. But it's a 42-minute symphony, and I couldn't find it. So
no thanks. Yeah. But wow, that's really clever. That's really clever.
So Anna writes about Pinky and the Brain. I was probably 8 or 9 when Hysteria started airing, and to be honest, I absolutely loved it. And by the way, this is Bob talking. We asked if anybody out there was a kid when Hysteria first came on.
Oh, yes, because we were too old for it at the time.
She goes on to say, if I had to watch something to do with history, I prefer that to Liberty's Kids, Barf. I did start to get weirded out by how hard they went on Father Time and the baby for advertising Kids WB, though. I was also a big watcher of Pinky and the Brain as an 8-year-old, even though I understood none of it. I liked it because my mom would watch it with me, even though I didn't understand what she was laughing at most of the time. Even now as a 30-year-old, sometimes I have to research the jokes because they're such deep cuts, I still don't get them. Even so, it was a great show, and I wish Amblin-type shows would come back. And again, we still have to figure out what that new Animaniacs will be and what Pinky and the Brain will do on it, and it better look good.
We shall see.
So help me God.
Fingers crossed. I just have to go on other Hulu original animated series, and those didn't look good. I'm hoping for the best. I hope for the best on this show. And it's not, I have trust in the artists who I know are working on it. It's just artists can only do so much with the budget they're given, though. That's the truth of animation. It's nice to hear that about Hysteria, that it at least worked on the intended audience of 8 and 9 year olds. By the time it came out, I was like 14 or 15. So
you were 16, Henry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. 16. So, I mean, I wasn't watching it, but I'd watch a few episodes just because I turned on the TV and I had to watch something. What was I going to do? Not watch TV? And yes, Anna is very right that the father time and baby were all, they seemed to really think that was funny. And
I remember that. Yeah, that's all I remember from the show is the promo stuff with those two characters.
And I don't miss it. It is the tail end of the Amblin animation era.
The last time they can get away with it was by making it educational. So that's it.
Well, now it's Henry's time to shine.
Ooh, more Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. You guys, I guess at this point, have listened to our Spider-Verse 1. We had a lot of fun with that. But before we did that, we had the appetizer of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and Video Man. And the first comment reading is from Zachary Adams. He says, I think it's interesting that they clearly came up with Video Man very early in the process, but different writers used him differently. There's this episode, one where a random gamer kid becomes Video Man and tries to be a superhero, and the one where J. Jonah Jameson and Iceman get stuck in an old disused game machine. My other strong memory is the Red Skull episode, when a Native American college professor has a Manji in his home and the Nazis mistake it for a swastika because the writers did enough research to know that it was originally an Indian symbol, not enough to know that it meant actual people from India, which I didn't mention it on the episode because it was honestly just too dark. But there was one episode they stopped airing in the 90s when in the rerun packages where they face off with Red Skull, and there's a lot of swastikas there. Yeah. Like,
and by the way, the Manji is a swastika, except the swastika flips the Manji and then tilts it 45 degrees. That's how it works. Actually, one of the dungeons in the first Legend of Zelda is a Manji symbol.
That's right, yeah. I remember, you know, just being in Japan and seeing that symbol on maps, and it gave me pause the first time, but that was me being ignorant.
It's another thing that Hitler ruined for all of us. Thanks a lot, dude.
Though, man, that episode with J. Jonah Jameson and Iceman and the old game machine, that sounds so funny. I think they faced Video Man that many times in the episode because it was very cheap. It was way cheaper to just use him again than design a new villain.
And don't draw backgrounds when you're in like the video void.
And you don't even have to draw things hitting him because they just fly through. So don't even go to that trouble.
So Diamond Fight says, your offhand comment that Kathy Garver was a voice on JoJo, I could not confirm that, by the way, sent me down a Google hole that revealed that Kathy Garver is on Twitter, has hardly any followers given her status, and is a right-wing lunatic.
Oh, that's a sad end to that story there, Diamond. I guess I should have figured she was a right-wing lunatic, but now I take back some of that praise of Kathy Garver, though I do think she's still really good as Angelica Jones. And that thing on JoJo, I dug just a little bit more. And I think she's just a random woman's voice in one of the Viz 90s dubs of the JoJo Part 3 OVAs that came out in like 95 or 96 stateside. So
I'm looking at her Twitter account now, and it is unhinged right-wing stuff. She has not tweeted for like months and months and months.
Hope she's okay.
But a lot of her tweets, do you really? But a lot of her tweets are just retweets of it, also other crazy people. Lots of gender stuff, lots of super, super far right-wing stuff.
What a cool lady. Yeah. Man. Well, all right. You know, let's pretend that that was the last thing you did was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
And we're all happier for that. So up next we have DuckTales, mm-hmm. Back to the Klondike. So happy with how that episode turned out. I did a lot of duck research, by the way, and I'm still in the duck world.
So much duck information. Yeah, it was fun to go back and read all those Carl Barks books as well. So Marco says, you Americans, sorry, I like that stance of it. You Americans merely adopted the Disney comics. As an Italian, I was born in it, molded by it. But seriously, Here, there have been original Duck and Mickey comics published since 1932 and weekly since the 50s. So I'm always surprised that Americans only know them as mascots. Mickey is boring. He's an ace detective. Regarding the problem with Donald's voice, I feel it deeply. One of my favorite comic series is Paperback New Adventures, a 90s series where he's basically a wisecracking Batman. Wow. I would have loved an animated adaptation of it, but unfortunately, Donald's voice would have made it impossible to understand. By the way, Henry, since you're a superhero fan, I really recommend it to you. It has been translated by fans and should be on the internet. So I understand why they decided to adapt his twin publication, Witch. And I'm a big time comic book fan, but I still really have an American viewpoint on this stuff. I think I'm able to understand at least the Japanese market a lot better than I did at one time. But still, the European market is very odd to me. It just doesn't feel... I know the guys... I can only really still see it through superhero stuff. Or at least, like, my favorite people who I know as Europeans are like Mobius. I read him first because he did a Silver Surfer comic, not because of any of his amazing work in Europe way before that. So it's a very American-centric viewpoint I have on comic history.
I was confused, always confused by the PK Donald Duck weird superhero guy. I was like, what? This is what you think Donald Duck is? But I mean, sure, why not?
When you're publishing Donald for that long, you're going to experiment and try new things with him and take him into weird places. So,
he was actually a parody of Diabolique.
Ah, of course. Yes. Of course. The classic Italian hero, which I've said it before, but that is too good a movie to be the last episode of MST3K.
It's so cheesy, though, still.
I guess, but...
Don't be one of those Silent Earth weirdos.
No. Hey, I just think there's a certain level of quality of like, this has too much camp quality. It should be devoid of artistic merit.
That's true. I guess for a last episode, they could have done a better
essentially,
one.
Essentially, yeah. But I will look this up. I want to check this out. And yeah, it's sad that like... Donald's voice is his voice, and I think you just kind of have to wait until that one guy dies.
Tony Anselmo. So yeah. Joe Hodgson actually talks about this in his comment. So let's split this comment up into two paragraphs. I'll read the first one. Joe says, I'm a bit of a Donald Duck purist, so the talk of changing his voice is practically blasphemous to me. They've been doing the bit about his voice, though, going back to the old shorts, probably most prominently in the 46 short Donald's Double Trouble, where Daisy dumps him for how he talks, and he hires a lookalike with a British accent to take his place.
That's a really great one.
I remember that one. I never had much trouble deciphering what he says, especially Tony Anselmo's Donald, which may just be due to the quality of the equipment he's been able to use throughout his career versus what Clarence Nash had. I've always felt that way, but now I'm even more biased, as I've had the benefit of conversing with Anselmo a few times, and he's a super nice guy and gave me and my kids some original artwork just for the hell of it.
Oh, man, I feel bad about what I just said. It was around the time the show Mickey and the Roadster Racers was premiering, which does not feature his voice, and it's the first time he hasn't done Donald since taking over for Nash. The actor in the show is doing the duck voice, so who knows what the behind-the-scenes motivation was, but he did tell me that there are some folks in the company that considered giving Donald a normal voice. They actually made him audition for the new DuckTales, and according to Anselmo, it was Bob Iger that made the call that Donald needs to have his duck voice.
I'm a little conflicted. I don't know.
Well, when Donald is in his classic setting of a silly adventure with Mickey and Goofy, that kind of stuff, or just short cartoony settings, I am totally fine with that voice, and it, you know, fits historically. But if you're especially going to base them on his adventure comics by Carl Barks, where he is an understandable person saying regular words, then the duck voice really changes the entire tenor of the story. But I also want consistency across all brands with Donald. So my theory, my personal suggestion is one that will take 100 years, but it is every Donald you get that's new, after the torch is passed from the current Donald, the next Donald who does it turns it down just 10%, not still recognizably the Donald voice, but turns it down just a little bit. And the next one turns it down a little bit and a little bit more till we're all just used to a normal Donald voice. That's
and then the earth will have no drinking water at that point.
Yeah, I mean, heat death has come by then anyway. So at that point, who cares if he can understand Donald?
I think if they recast Donald with a quote-unquote normal voice, whatever voice they give him, I don't know what to expect. I don't know what voice you give that character. So I know I will know immediately if I will like it or hate it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Sort of like Mario. When you first heard Mario talk, you're like, oh, that works, sure. You now, never thought you would have liked it.
Yeah, yeah. I never would have cast for it, so who knows? I mean, well, a problem if they wanted to do Don Cheadle all the time like they did for a one-off joke in DuckTales is that Don Cheadle is not available enough to record regularly for a 26 episode a year animated series.
And plus, I mean, they hired him as a joke, like the most directly, the most articulate, like deep voice you could get.
Mm-hmm. That wasn't Donald. Voice. Yeah. Yeah.
So our final comment is from John, who says, I went to art school in Dawson City, Yukon, where Scrooge made his fortune. The town has 1,200 people, but at least four original floppy copies of Back to the Klondike, including one in the Gold Rush Museum archives and one just sitting in the local laundromat, which honestly, I should have stolen. I hope the town will one day make some Scroogeously cheap monument to Barks. Barks and Rosa draw on a lot of real Gold Rush history, as well as the now-dead genre of Northerns, and Glittering Goldie was based on the actual Kathleen Klondike Kate Rockwell, a vaudeville mogul who swindled miners but had a heart of gold. Aww. Interesting, yeah.
That's sweet. I mean, she's definitely being played Mae West style in voice, but yeah, the original character is more based on that, I guess.
I guess I'm not 120 years old as Barks would be right now, so I don't get these references.
Northerns, I guess like it's a Western, but for the North.
That's like stories about the Yukon.
I mean, stories, that's actually... Boy, now I remember there was a Calvin and Hobbes story?
Yeah, Yukon Ho, the book.
I feel like it was inspired by a Barks... It's like Barks grew up with the Gold Rush being a real thing, that he knew people who did it. And his, I guess, appreciation or respect for those heroes who braved the wilderness to get gold. Well, how brave. I guess he then passed that along to a new generation. He was like, hey, these people in the Yukon seem pretty cool.
And one thing I didn't mention, it came up in my research, but a friend of the show, Nina Matsumoto, brought it up that Osamu Tezuka, the godfather of manga, was a huge Barks fan. They actually had a relationship. And Donald Duck appears in a Tezuka comic, like as a joke. Huh. But if you look at the layout of Tezuka's artwork in his comics, you can definitely see how much he liked Barks. Like, they're identical in terms of how the staging is, how characters interact with each other, like the slapstick.
Well, on panel layouts and, yeah, also the slapstick. I mean, Tezuka, even in his most serious books, will still have a few panels of slapstick here and there just to, like, lighten the mood. Yeah, the tonally, it's so similar to his Astro Boy stories are so similar to. And when you look at Astro Boy next to, like, Donald has such a specific, like, silhouette, which he appears in so many times, same as Scrooge. Then you see Astro Boy's silhouette or, you know, Ochanomizu, the professor. It's just so distinct as well.
Yeah, and I think Tezuka was the Disney of Japan until Miyazaki took that title. I mean, he didn't take it. It was given to him.
I mean, at least according to us Westerners. I don't know.
I mean, it is reductive, but it's a shorthand. Like, he's Japan's Walt Disney, and he kind of was with all of his characters and worlds.
Oh, Tezuka, sure, yeah. I mean, also that he invented the televised animation industry in Japan as well.
That too, that helps a lot.
Which, someday maybe we'll do one of those creaky old Astro Boy cartoons, just because it is where televised anime began. There was theatrical Japanese animation before it, but televised Japanese animation that could be produced in the limited style to get weekly deadlines, Tezuka invented it, basically.
The entire process.
It's insane.
But we will never watch the 2009 American animated Astro Boy movie, which I had to remind Henry existed. It came up in research for something. I'm like, that happened. Ooh, that happened a decade ago. There was the Astro Boy movie in America. People made it.
That'll be our 400th What a Cartoon Movie when we're like 80. We'll do it then.
It probably cost like $90 million.
It was probably quite expensive.
Yeah.
No, it was... It was every mistake you can make of, like, you don't want to make it as silly as the old thing, but you can't make it too serious either. So you're just trapped in this middle realm of, like, just junk. And also, like, the biggest famous person they could get for it was Kristen Bell, which I love Kristen Bell. She's not a person that will sell tickets to a movie.
Speaking of the Spider-Verse, our movie, the last What a Cartoon Movie we did, Nicolas Cage played Dr. Tenma.
Oh, wow.
The father of Astro Boy. This is a weird cast.
Oh, man. That's a good Tenma. That's a good Tenma.
Charlize Theron. I mean, it's full of good actors. Alan Tudyk, Eugene Levy, and Astro Boy's Freddie Highmore?
That guy I don't remember.
I don't know who that is. Some British guy.
Oh, boo. But wait, so
just booing Britain in general.
Is Eugene Levy a Chanamizu, or is he?
Let me see. One second. He plays Orin, Tenma's cowardly robotic household servant.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that fits. Boy, whatever happened? Is he retired or something? I feel like
no, he just shows up for everything. Okay. Oh, he's actually in Schitt's Creek, which is a hear a good Canadian series with Chris Elliott is in it.
Okay,
and Catherine O'Hara.
I've heard. Well, yeah. I have heard good stuff about it, but there's just so many things on Netflix. It always goes to the back of the bus for me.
It seems to have given him a little more dignity.
That's good.
As like, you know, the doofy dad who shows up character.
I mean, the 800 American Pie movies he was in, that definitely lowered his dignity quite a bit.
But raised his bank account. Oh, yeah.
They made 8 million of those direct-to-video ones, and the only guy they could get was him. He's like, this is still technically an American Pie movie if I'm here. Oh, yeah. I now teach kids at college. Yeah.
SCTV was a long time ago. Yes, but thanks for joining us for another episode of Talk to the Audience. May is going to be a big month for us. More Talking of the Hill. My birthday's coming up.
Tell Bob happy birthday.
Yes, I'll be 37 years old. That's right. I aged 37 years in a row. That's the only time I can make that joke. I got to make it on that day. Yes.
I'll steal that in September when it's my 37th birthday.
Sloppy seconds.
And also, yes, quick preview again, if you didn't hear it on our What a Cartoon Movie podcast, but next month's movie, which you'll be able to vote on very soon, is the runners-up / losers pool, where a bunch of four movies that had previously gotten second place in our polls are going to be up for vote. So finally, if you were sad that my one favorite almost got it but didn't make it, now's your chance again, and you can make all the rest double losers if your favorite runner-up wins.
In my opinion, they're all winners, but in a more specific way, one of them will be the winner.
Yes. But look forward to that. Everybody $5 and up will be able to vote on it. And by the end of May, you will $10 and up folks will be able to hear our thoughts.
Yes, please look forward to that in another episode of Talk to the Audience in a month. But until then, we'll see you soon. Goodbye.
Infotainment.